Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Downright Upright Show, the place to go to hear out loud and proud what Minnesotans are thinking. And I am your host, Philip Anthony. Thank you all for joining us today, and I hope you're all doing fantabulous. And fantabulous is fantastic and fabulous, put together twice as nice, saves time. Like that?
Fantabulous.
Are you feeling fantabulous?
Absolutely.
Because it's so much more powerful than just fabulous. Because we all say fabulous, but fantabulous is amazing. So my special guest today is amazing too. She is the executive director of Outfront Minnesota, Kat Roan. Yay, Kat. Welcome to the Downright Upright Show.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
I am so happy that you're here. I really am. I told you before the show, I reached out because I met you at an event. It was an Outfront event. And AM 950 had a table there as well. And you were just so nice and so approachable and so kind. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You're great. So as you know, it's my custom on all my shows to ask my guest, or guests, plural, about their beginnings. You know, where they were born, raised, educated, and any anecdotes that led up to today. You know, I'm sure there's some interesting stories you'd want to tell us from back in the day, as they say. So would you like to share any of those with us and tell us, you know, about your background?
Yeah, for sure. I grew up in the Midwest. So I spent most of my childhood down in Northfield, Minnesota, about 45 minutes south of the Twin Cities, and then went to college down in Iowa at Grinnell College. So I've spent a lot of time in the Midwest. I was actually born in Massachusetts, so I like to say sometimes I bring some of that East Coast energy, which I'm sure you can appreciate. But having spent my life in the Midwest, this is home for me. And, you know, it's a place that I care for deeply. And I think, you know, for me growing up, like in Minnesota, in a smaller town, you know, Northfield's a college community. You've got these two college campuses, but it is rural Minnesota. It's greater Minnesota. It's outside of the metro area. And, you know, growing up in the 1990s, the visibility for LGBTQ issues in general was very different than it is today, certainly. And, you know, for me, particularly as a trans person, the lack of any sort of trans visibility in culture was, you know, something that was definitely formative for me in terms of taking time to find my own identity and terminology and language. I like to joke with folks that my first example of, like, trans or LGBTQ representation was Bugs Bunny, who I think, you know, brings a very playful character quality to, you know, gender and identity and relationships in a different way. But, you know, when that is your only real point of reference as a kid growing up for what your identity might be, it maybe is a little harder to see, like, how am I going to fit into this world if I'm not a cartoon bunny? And so, you know, for me growing up, like, that lack of visibility hindered my ability to square these two things. One, that I knew about myself that I was a trans person. I didn't have the language at the time, but I was like, you know, something about this isn't lining up. And, you know, something.
Were you a preteen or when first started happening?
I was
in your
around
brain?
Like 10 or 11 where I was like, wait a second, this isn't quite right. And, you know, it took me about another decade to really, like, have the language for that conversation where I was like, okay, I understand what this is. And I've seen, you know, other trans folks or other LGBTQ folks who have given me some, you know, space and community and home. But because of that, you know, it took me a while to get there. And I think that's true for a lot of folks. I hope now that's true for fewer folks because folks are able to see community and see models in public, you know, at every level, whether it's at organizational leaders like myself, folks in community, folks on the media, in a different way that hopefully is giving people a little bit more visibility. But for me, that was a long journey. And I've been really fortunate to have a great deal of support from my family, from community, from others, but it took me a while to get there. And I think that's a very natural part of that story when you don't have that representation or support.
That's amazing that your family is accepting that. Thank you. I mean, that's, you just made my day because you wouldn't believe the amount of stories I hear about families that do not.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's still super common. But, you know, I like to joke about it. You know, I've got a grandmother who's in her late 90s. And when I came out to her a couple years back, you know, she was like, why did it take you so long? And that was it. You know, it was like,
what?
That was it. She was like, you know, glad to know this about you. Great, let's move forward. And I want that experience for everybody. I don't, you know, my experience is maybe unique in that space. I know a lot of folks have challenges with family. But for me, what it tells me is that it's possible. And I want that possibility for everybody.
Thank you, Grandma. Is she watching? Is she going to watch the show?
Yeah, I'll make sure she tunes in.
Thank you, Grandma. You're amazing. I haven't met you, but you're amazing. I wish every grandma was just like her because, you know, I had a mom that accepted me. My
That's
mom.
That's beautiful.
Everybody
yeah.
else. But my mom was there. I mean, she kind of knew. I mean, come on. I was playing with Barbies. You know, I was supposed to go out and play with kids, baseball and hockey and, you know, and I'm playing hopscotch and playing with Barbies. I mean, kind of gives it away, doesn't it?
You know? Yeah.
Anyway. So how did you land the role of executive director of OutFront Minnesota? And what have been and will be the challenges of that role?
Yeah, so I like to say in a lot of ways that I sort of stumbled into this particular role. And, you know, I think it's kind of funny because it's a very intentional role to carry. Most people
don't. So you're walking along one day and
just
you
fell
stumbled
into it.
And you just fell into it.
Yeah. So for 12 years prior to starting this role, I had been a professional fundraiser, not in LGBTQ spaces, but just nonprofit fundraising, mostly in like higher education spaces. Higher education fundraising is a very different world, but fundraising is very applicable if you run a nonprofit. And so it just so happened that my then boss, who was fantastic, announced he was going to be leaving on the Monday of a particular week. And I was like, I haven't looked for a job in 6 years. Maybe I'll just poke my head up, see what's there. You know, here's an opportunity to kind of reassess things. And this particular job was closing its application process that Friday. So I had like 4 days to decide. And I said, what the heck? I'll throw in my application. We'll see what happens. If it's the right job, great. If not, I've got a great job. I'm happy where I'm at. And here we are. And I think, you know, for me, I put in the application because I think this is a really unique and important moment in LGBTQ rights movement spaces. I think Minnesota is a uniquely positioned state to do really good work. And I was like, if this is my opportunity to take my skills and my passion for these issues and lead, great, let's do it.
How long has OutFront Minnesota been around?
37 years.
37 years.
37 years.
Even back when it was like taboo to be gay and trans?
Yeah, back in...
Well, it's still kind
of,
but...
Yeah, I mean, we still have plenty of challenges. But, yeah. You know, I think, you know, OutFront started in the late 80s as really a response to HIV/AIDS moment and trying to create more community support. You know, Minneapolis and St. Paul have had a long-standing organizing scene around LGBTQ issues. And so this organization emerged out of that work and became a focal point for both, you know, community support, but also organizing around these key political issues. And, you know, we've gone through many evolutions over 37 years. It's a long time for any organization to be around. But like I say to a lot of folks, you know, the civil rights movement didn't end, you know, when they signed the Civil Rights Act, and the LGBTQ rights movement did not end after Stonewall and the first Pride Parade. And the fact that these organizations are still here, still doing this work, still engaging, is a testament to both the continuing needs of the community, but the way in which our communities stayed together, rooted around these same causes of equity and advancing justice and having, you know, equal representation and support in society.
When you mentioned AIDS, it brought me back because I'm a little bit older than you.
Really?
I love you. Thank you. My birthday is next week, so yeah. But you could get. I'll tell you how old I am later. I don't want anybody to know. Anyway, but I remember in the 80s, being serious for a second here. I volunteered for the gay men's health crisis in New York City in Greenwich Village. They had this big building that was like a go-to place for LGBT people in those days. And you had to see the people. And they had a suicide hotline as well,
yeah,
because a lot of AIDS patients were, it's just sad, my best friend died of AIDS. It was a bad time for us,
yeah,
in our community in general, and I'm glad that we're able to jump over that hurdle, and because I lost a lot of friends, and and our community lost a lot of people. And volunteering there was, it was something I had to do. I couldn't sit back and watch. That's why I think you're doing what you're doing, because I'm putting myself in your body right now. And I'm saying that Kat's doing this because she can't sit back and watch this.
Yeah, and I think that's true. You know, for me, like, you know, there were those different moments throughout my life where I was like, I need to be involved in some way. And this was an opportunity to step up. And I think, you know, for many folks in our community, the HIV/AIDS crisis was that moment of getting engaged and saying, I can't just sit idly by while this happens to my community, to my friends, to my neighbors. I need to do something. And
Absolutely.
That something looks different for all of us, but that is an important moment in any movement.
And I'll tell you something. I was a very shy kid. you know, kids didn't like me because I was different. And for me to go and volunteer and do something like this and be in front of people and, you know, talk and, you know, that was a big step for me. But I had to do something. I mean, you can't sit around, even when it comes to elections, because, you know, that's important for our community as well. If you don't go out and vote, if you sit on your couch and eat bonbons, it's not things are not going to happen for us.
Save the couch and the bonbons for after the vote is in. Then you can
eat all the bonbons you want. No, I shouldn't say that because it's not good for you. Anyway, but so I know that all nonprofit organizations such as Outfront Minnesota have a mission, right? They have a mission statement. Can you tell the listeners what that mission is?
In short, to advance LGBTQ equity. And we do a lot of work to that effect. We do work at the Capitol, which a lot of folks know us for, our work around policies and supporting that. We organize folks to get out the vote so they aren't just sitting on their couches, but actually getting engaged with the civic process, whether that's through voting, showing up, talking to their elected officials at every level of government. We do a lot of work around our educational equity program, which works with K through 12 schools, training teachers, supporting GSAs, doing all sorts of work to support that infrastructure throughout the state, not just here in the Twin Cities metro area. And then we have a longstanding anti-violence program that runs a helpline and helps support folks who have been the victims of violence and discrimination within our communities.
Mm. Well, at the end of the show, I'm going to give your information for Outfront, and people can donate, right?
Fabulous, yes.
It's fantabulous.
Fantabulous. Yes.
I'm just kidding you. And they can volunteer, right?
Yes, we do have some opportunities for volunteers, and particularly as we get into Pride season, we would welcome volunteers to come and help staff tables and join us on probably we'll be at 25 to 30 Prides around the state.
Really?
Yes.
Well, so you're going to be at Pride this year, you think?
Yes, we'll definitely be at Twin Cities Pride this year, and we'll be at another, like I said, about 25 all around the state, everywhere from, you know, Duluth to Northfield to Moorhead, all over.
Well, you need to, you know what you need to do, though, at Pride? You need to come to the AM 950 tent and say hello.
I will.
Because I'll be there, along with the other three hosts, because we have a four-hour block, as you know. It's the first time, I think, in radio history where we had 4 hours of LGBT shows, LGBTQ shows, and it's groundbreaking.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And to have that community space and to broadcast live from there, fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you heard about that, right?
I did.
Andy Otto told you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. I can't, I haven't met him yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got to fix that.
I want to meet you, Andy. I'm waiting. Okay. So on the Outfront Minnesota website, you are quoted as saying, now, before I read the quote, I just want my listeners to know, I literally had chills down my spine when I read it. It's so beautiful and eloquent. It's so well said. I mean, nobody could say this better than you. So
thank you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you should go into writing. Do you ever think of doing that? Like inspiring other LGBTQ people to be their authentic selves? Because I think you have a gift. It's amazing.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. Think about it. Anyway, so here's the quote. Quote, the needs are urgent and we must prioritize the safety and well-being of everyone in our community. Our work for LGBTQ equality must be in concert with efforts on racial justice, public safety, environmental justice, reproductive rights, and housing justice. These are things that we haven't spoken about on the show, and I'm glad you brought them up. The fusion has the power to transform our world for the better. The fusion. Getting all of those issues in like a ball of yarn, right? And because they all run into each other. They all influence our community. You know, housing. I mean, I just had a show. I don't know if you heard this one. A couple of weeks ago, there's a new LGBTQ Rotary Club just formed. Did you know that?
I didn't know. That's fantastic.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And you know what they do? They through their donations, they go to IKEA, build furniture and find places for homeless LGBTQ youth, and they make their furniture for them and give them a place to live.
I love that.
This is what it's about, love, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So everything you enumerated so eloquently in your quote, I personally embrace. And could you elaborate on why your words are so important to our community as a whole? Why those things have to be all encompassing?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, for one, and I reiterate this a lot, especially when I'm speaking at the legislature, but LGBTQ people are in every single demographic category in our state. They're in every single community in our state. They're in every county, every place, all over the board. So when we talk about issues like the environment, or we talk about housing, or we talk about safety, these are issues that affect everybody, but often there are unique aspects to the LGBTQ experience, and often we can bring some of our unique experiences and perspectives to these issues in ways that, you know, talk about how the LGBTQ community, even though we have disparate experiences, you know, my experience as a trans person is different than your experience as a member of this community. But because we're able to come together around the shared experience of being othered by a lot of society, we can bring both that sense of community and that power for change. That mm-hmm. sense of, like, even if my experience and yours are different, we both understand our experiences at a root level. And I think when we bring it to these other issues, it allows us to bring that perspective, that richness to that experience. And I think the other piece too is, you know, so often we see issues carved off as like single problems. You know, it's like, you know, this issue of housing is just a housing issue, right? It's just about people who, you know, don't have enough money. But housing is complex. And when I talk to LGBTQ community members, housing often is like the top thing that is on people's minds outside of healthcare. Like, those are the top two issues that I consistently hear, no matter the age, no matter what population I'm talking to, because we all need stability and we all need well-being. And so, you know, when we address things like housing, we help ourselves, we help neighboring communities, we help BIPOC folks who have been under, you know, represented in, you know, home ownership and other things like that. And we lift up everybody. You know, I like to say that if we help, you know, the folks in our community who are most marginalized by all of these different systems, everybody else is going to stand to benefit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where this work comes from. When we bring all those issues together, and instead of treating ourselves as isolated pockets, but we talk about our issues as a whole, we have more power because there are more of us showing up more of the time, and we're talking about the same shared issues, and things actually happen. And I think, you know, last year's legislative session was certainly a good example.
Yeah, I want to piggyback on that a little bit, because there are, and I don't like to be Debbie Downer, because, you know, this is an uplifting show, but there are, you were talking about us as a family, LGBTQ+, okay, mm-hmm. We're a family, we are. When I came out in the 80s, it was drama. The way the trans people are being treated now is what we were being treated back in the day.
Yes.
You're going through the same journey that we did, and that's why we need to stick together, because you were there for us. We have to be there for you. It's a family. There are people, though. Oh, we have 43 seconds. I have to hurry up. When we come back, we can talk more about the LGB trying to break away from the T. There's some people that want to do that. I'm sure you've heard that. So my name is Philip Anthony. This is the Downright Upright Show here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. You know what? It's the only thing that there's just too little of. I mean, all my songs on my show, they're all pertinent. I wouldn't put on, you know, I'm a Barbie girl, you know, it's my theme music. But it has to be something pertinent. And that song just inspires me.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome back to the Downright Upright Show. I am Philip Anthony with my guest, Kat Roan. And remember before the break, we were talking about the LGB without the T thing. I don't remember the name of the organization, as I mentioned to you, because I block out negativity. So can you talk about that? Because I'm sure you've run into this. And what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, unfortunate, you know, folks trying to carve off portions of the community that they can't relate to or don't have experience with to try and create this sort of like respectability politics of like, we're the good ones and these folks are weird, right? Like, and we've seen this in our movement throughout, you know, LGBTQ movement as a whole throughout its history has had moments where we've been uncomfortable with certain pieces of our movement and community and have tried to like sort of sideline them. And the truth is, we're just stronger when we're together, and there's so much overlap across it. It's not like trans folks are, you know, off in their own unique corner. There are gay and lesbian and bisexual trans folks. And they're, you know, folks who have identities that shift a little bit over time as they figure out who they are. And so I think, you know, one of our strengths as a community has been able to give that space and grace to say, this is a broad range of experiences and folks are going to come to it. You know, I had somebody who came out at a nursing home, last year. And we were working with them to help support that conversation. And, you know, I like to say that this is a community that encompasses everybody wherever they're at on their journey. And the bigger and broader that tent is, the healthier it is for all of us because we learn something about one another. And that shared experience matters. And I think it's really unfortunate when community tries to carve itself off because it does a disservice to all of the shared work we've done together.
Yeah. I think it is, like I mentioned to you during the break, LGB without the T is almost like cutting off your arm. It's like, you know, because I want to tell you people out there who think this is it should be a thing, which it shouldn't, go back to Stonewall. And who was there at Stonewall?
All of us.
There were drag performers. There were trans people. Gay people, lesbians, everybody. And it's almost like what Lincoln said, a house divided cannot stand.
Mm-hmm.
So we would be so much weaker as a society if we were able to carve off pieces of us. We need to be together. And what you said was amazing. So thank you for bringing that up. So let's go to the coming out thing, because this is my favorite part of the show. As you already know, this show is a safe space for members of the LGBTQ plus community to speak their truth. As much as you are comfortable, you know, if you can talk to the listeners about your coming out experience and how was it pleasant, was it seamless, was it not, and how you can inspire people that are listening, that are going through that now, to move forward.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, coming out is always a journey for everybody. And yes. I'm like fortunately or unfortunately in a public position enough that at this point I kind of assume that people know that I'm out. Like I have to go on the
well,
media,
yeah.
Right? You know, like my job title and the work that I do kind of gives it away. So, you know, now I don't have to have these conversations. But, you know, coming out for me was like a 15-year process. It wasn't just one day I'm like, okay, I'm out to the world and everything's set. It was like, you know, I started coming out to these folks who were closest to me, you know, my partner who I've been with for, you know, now 20 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My, you know, parents, like a couple of other close folks, and kind of testing the waters. Like, this is important to me. I want to share it with you. I'm not, you know, like still kind of figuring out what this all means for me, but like, I need your support, right? And each of those conversations was really scary, right? Stepping into that space for the first time and being vulnerable and saying, like, I don't know what's going to happen, right? These are people I care about deeply, relationships I care about deeply. And, you know, as I shared, I've been super fortunate that the folks in my life have been super supportive. And so those have gone really tremendously well for me. And, you know, throughout my life, like, I kept taking kind of those steps forward. I remember my first job out of college, which is part of what got me sort of into the organizing and advocacy space. I was looking through our health insurance packet, and there was a blanket exclusion for trans-related care. It was fairly common at the time. And, you know, some people might have been nervous about that. I was like, this is wrong. So I just walked down to HR and I was like, do you know this is in here? Can we fix this? And a year later, it was fixed. And I didn't come out in that conversation. But, you know, effectively, you're coming out to some degree to say, like, this is an important issue to me. I'm sure most employees weren't going there through a fine-tooth comb of the, you know, HR policies to see what was included there. But all of those things gave me the confidence to keep having more conversations. And, you know, I think for me, that coming out story is about, like, expanding that circle of comfort, right? Like, you start with the people you trust most, who are most important to you, who you think are going to receive this well, and then you keep opening that door a little bit wider until one day you're just walking around the world and that's just your experience, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm there now, but it took me a while to get here. It wasn't like I just one day decided now I'm going to be an out trans person. Like, that was like a step to step to step to step till I finally was like, okay, I'm ready to do this. And now I'm here and happy and proud and delighted. But, you know, there were times where that was a really scary thing, even when it went well.
Yeah. Well, this is, well, for me, I'm going to come speak about myself and maybe you can relate. I came out twice. And not because I'm trans. I came out twice because you have to come out to yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big one.
Yep.
Because I grew up in a very religious family. Everything was, you know, church and this and that, and, you know, it's a sin, and you're a deviant if you do that, and blah, 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 you know. And so I had fought it so long. And it's almost like, you know, I use this analogy, and I think you may have, empathize with me. You know, when you take somebody's head and you shove it in the water and they can't breathe, after a while you have to come up. And take a breath. That's what happened to me. It just happened one day. You know, I'm like, I'm done. I'm going. And I used to sneak into the village in New York to the gay clubs as a, 19 maybe years old. Sorry, Mom. She's up there, though. God bless her. But I did a lot of things to try to fight it, but I couldn't anymore. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be me. Did you have two coming out, one to yourself and then one to everybody else?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think for me, you know, coming to that self-realization was like a long process where I was like, maybe, yeah. And then you finally get there and then you're like, well, now the coming out process is like, how do and when do I want to share this with other people? And, you know, I think those two things are two very different steps. And I think that first one is deeply important because I think, you know, being able to really arrive at that moment of self-understanding and acceptance, like it can be complicated for some of us. But arriving at that moment of self-acceptance is really the first step to being like, now I can find community and support and celebration of my identity in a way that didn't feel possible when I was still in that like tentative space. And I think that's really true for all of us.
Yeah, it's nice. And it's nice to have allies that support you because, again, I grew up in an area where I probably was the only gay person I knew. Really?
Yeah.
And I had girlfriends. Like I mentioned to you, I liked hanging out with girls.
Yeah.
And they were amazing to me. And they were like my sisters, you know.
Yeah.
And they accepted me when I came out to them. They were like, Philip, come on. I mean, come on, Philip. do you think we're stupid or something? But yeah. But moving on to cisgender and straight members of our general community are not always aware that most of us live very ordinary lives, just like they do.
Yeah, we do boring stuff sometimes.
Yeah, cleaning the house and stuff. Yeah, I don't think we do that. I remember the old days. I was talking about this on another show. The old days when they would show pride parades, the camera would go on the most strange person. You know, like a guy had his buttocks hanging out, and the girl had her breasts out, and you know, everybody that's acting the most bizarre, you know, the freak factor, I used to call it. And 99.99999% of us don't do that.
True.
We don't. True.
I have not had my buttocks out at a pride parade.
Neither have I.
Yet. No. We'll just caveat that.
Yeah, we'll just caveat that for me too. Yeah. So the labels of gay and trans usually overshadow us as people and sometimes block the general community from recognizing our humanity. Would you agree with that statement? Why and why not? And how can we get people in the community, the general community, to understand that?
Yeah, I would agree completely. And I think, again, it's, you know, the like challenge of being in any sort of marginalized group where you have to advocate for your identity and your space, right? We have to talk about ourselves in order to be recognized and in order to have equality. And because of that, we often get defined by that particular conversation and struggle. And, you know, the trans folks I know, the LGBTQ folks that I know do all sorts of things from, you know, the boring to the really extraordinary, unrelated to their identity in terms of sexual orientation and gender identity. And I think when we only see LGBTQ folks through that limited lens of you're defined by this, we limit our humanity. And so, you know, when we see somebody like, I think about Senator Scott Dibble, who's a tremendous champion for like transportation and infrastructure.
He was on this show.
Yeah. And, yes. You know, Scott is a fantastic individual, but his passion for transportation and, you know, the amount of time he dedicates at the legislature to that work is far greater than on LGBTQ issues, and he's tremendous on LGBTQ issues. But I think, you know, when you define people narrowly, you miss out on all of these sort of passions and interests and engagements that they have all over the place, you mm-hmm. know? You know, if you think about somebody like Laverne Cox just as the trans actress, right? Like, it limits your ability to see her as this really well-ranged, like, you know, fantabulous person who can really bring energy to all sorts of things. You know, I know she was doing some hosting for GLAAD at, I think, at the Emmys. And, you know, her ability to just connect with people and, you know, bring that personality to any space has nothing to do with being trans. Mm-hmm. She's just a fantastic personality. And so, like, you know, we bring that energy to whatever spaces we're in as a community. And I really hope that more people, I think one of the strengths of the marriage equality campaign was bringing that humanity to our stories to say that, like, look, we're people who have all of these experiences, but these experiences are shared. And even if you don't have that experience as a, you know, cisgender or straight person, you can relate to some shared experience in humanity that has nothing to do with our sexual orientation or gender identity. And those things are important, but we're also bigger than those two things.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, you conjured up something in my brain that made me laugh. I had a lesbian friend back in the day in New York. She was, we used to call in the old days, I don't know if they call it anymore, lipstick lesbian. They still yep. use that term. She was very feminine. She wore makeup and she, you know, frilly dresses. She was very, very, very cute. I loved her. And when she would come out, she told me stories when she would come out, they go, oh, come on, you don't look like a lesbian. and she said, well, what does a lesbian look like? and that hits it right on the head. You know, we're a very diverse community, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a little gay, you know, but my husband isn't. But he's gay. You know, when people say, are you gay? I say, no, but my husband is, you know. I mean, it's so silly that we have to, you know, put ourselves in boxes like that. And we just can't be, you know, you could be a very, very masculine gay man, a very feminine gay man. You could be a very masculine lesbian or a very feminine lesbian. You could be a very big, tall, trans person and a very petite, small trans. I mean, we're all different, and we all should be accepted. We should all be ourselves and fit into society like as if everybody else is. You know, everybody else does, I should say. So, yeah. Did you have something else to say, or did I cut you off?
No, I think you're good.
I think I did it. Okay. All right. So sometimes I have a habit of being loquacious. I love that
It's
word.
A good thing for a radio show.
Yeah, you know, that's what they say. Philip, you're perfect for this. You talk a lot, so it's good. In real life, too. So what can we do as a community to ensure that our LGBTQ family feels safe and belonging, and they have belonging going forward? What I love about Out Front is that you do outreach to those who may fear potential violence directed against them. What are some resources you have to connect those who are experiencing that fear?
Yeah, certainly. So I think there's a couple things. One, you know, certainly if folks are experiencing violence, discrimination, if they just need support, go to our website, outfront.org. There's a link there to the anti-violence program. You can reach out either to our helpline by phone or send an email to avp@outfront.org, and we'll have staff that can follow up. And whether or not we have the resources to support you in a particular situation, we can certainly either help you directly or navigate you to other resources that might be of assistance. But I think broadly at a community level, the most important thing that we can do is have conversations with people. Because we can pass all the policies in the world, we can do really great things here in the state of Minnesota, but culture is ultimately where people's safety and well-being is going to come from. And, folks in greater Minnesota in a small rural community are going to have a very different experience with their safety and their relationship to their community than folks who are maybe living in Loring Park, right?
I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah.
You read my mind again.
I think we're connecting here, Kat. Good.
I really do. But yeah, when you were talking about rural members of our community.
Yeah.
Are you seeing a lot of that outreach? Are they calling you in greater numbers than city folk would? But is it a common occurrence? Do you get a lot of people calling you and saying, "Well, I'm not feeling safe," or "I'm afraid," whatever, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think, unfortunately, it's true across the board. You know, we like to think that the Twin Cities are safer for LGBTQ folks, but folks here still experience violence and discrimination, whether it's in schools, in the general public. You know, we've certainly seen that. But, you know, I think for folks in rural communities, because you're often a little bit more isolated, especially in smaller communities, you don't have the community organizations as present. There aren't maybe as many, like, LGBTQ-specific community events. It can be harder to find that network of support and that space to come into if you're somebody who's being victimized. And so, you know, we do see higher numbers of folks in greater Minnesota. And I genuinely believe that folks, you know, have the ability to be safe, be welcomed in any of these communities, but sometimes it takes a little extra support. So whether that's reaching out to resources like us or just simply finding community through the internet, through, you know, connections in community, or even small spaces. Like, I have seen so many little groups of just, you know, folks in small communities getting together for coffee on a weekend as their sort of informal LGBTQ gathering community space, right? And those are so meaningful, especially if you're in a town of, you know, 10,000 or less, because it is that sense of home and that space where you can share your concerns, your story, whatever you need.
And you need to talk to someone. Very simple. Okay, so if you are out there and you need to talk to somebody about this, you're scared, you feel othered, whatever, go to outfront.org, or even if you want to talk to me, downrightuprightshow@gmail.com. The final question, we have a minute and 20 seconds, so let's try to get this really quick, because then after this we have the shift. Outfront has many different legislative priorities. Can you talk about a couple of them as you can remember them? I personally know two that protected our community, such as the Trans Refuge Bill and the Anti-Conversion Therapy Bill. And remember that kids need love, not a cure. Hit it.
Yeah, we did those two bills last year. They were both signed into law by the governor on the same day. It was a beautiful experience just to see community come together and to see longstanding priorities pass, especially when we were watching what was happening all around the country. This year, we're doing some work around parentage to make sure all LGBTQ families and all families are fully recognized. We're working on an LGBTQ panic defense bill that will hopefully end that practice here in the state of Minnesota. We've got a gender-affirming care insurance mandate that'll be going through, and about a dozen other things that we're working on. So lots of good work moving forward. Right now, the legislature's in session through end of May, basically. So still work to be done.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with The Shift. My name is Philip Anthony, and this is the Downright Upright Show on AM 950, the progressive voice of
Minnesota.
Yay, Minnesota. Yay.
Come on, people now, smile on your brothers. get together. Try to love one another right now.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Downright Upright Show. I am Philip Anthony, and I am here again with the lovely and talented and wonderful Kat Roan. I could do my NPR voice. Kat Roan. You like that?
Yeah, it's a good radio voice.
It's a good radio voice. So, as you know, this show, we end it with current events. We have a part of the show we like to call The Shift, where we shift the questioning away from your personal journey and to your opinions on current events. And don't forget to say the F in shift, otherwise we have problems. So, as you know, Congress avoided a government shutdown, which ticked off Marjorie Taylor Greene. We love her, don't we? Anyway, and her friends in the Freedom Caucus. And now they are threatening to vacate the chair again, like they already did with former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. What are your thoughts about that wonderful experience?
I've got a lot of thoughts on that experience. One, I think even setting partisan politics aside, it is remarkable to me just how much infighting is happening right now at a national level within the Republican Party. And the inability to even coalesce around a chair, you know, like that to me tells me that there's something culturally, structurally wrong with the party and its leadership and its inability to create any sort of cohesion or message. It is in nobody's best interest to shut down the government unless you want to just make a mess of everything. Yes. And I think that is really the message that folks should take away from this. Mm-hmm. Like, regardless of what your party affiliation is, where you voted, shutting down the government is bad for business because it has ripples all across the board for social services programs, for the economy, for all of the things that are necessary for our, you know, daily life functioning. And I wish they would just set this fight aside. There are plenty of other things they can fight about. But I also think the other piece that comes in through it is that, you know, there's often these fights around LGBTQ issues around the budget, you know, discussions about can we, you know, end, you know, care for trans folks through this budget process or try and cut off funding for DEI programs or whatever. And really, honestly, I don't think these are nuts and bolts issues for most Americans. Like, I know that people are fundraising off of this. I know that people are real angry about these issues. But at the end of the day, most people don't care about that line item in the budget. You're just making a big mess of it because you personally have an issue with it. And I would hope that they could find better hobbies. I don't know. Take up crochet. I don't know. Find something to do with your time. Because, you know, we need people who are in government who are actually there to do the work. And that's the piece that frustrates me most is when we have people who are there just to grandstand on that platform. Look, y'all, there's talk shows, there's, you know, all sorts of spaces to share your opinion. Mm-hmm. But while you're in government, do the work of the people who elected you to be there and do the work of the American people, which is keeping the government open
Fund
and running.
The government, yes.
This is basic issues.
Basic. And I heard, I don't know if you heard this, but I think they injected in this bill, in this, it's minibus, I think they called it a...
Omnibus.
Is it an omnibus or a minibus? Because... You could go in a minivan. Anyway, no, but I heard they injected the trans and gay flags cannot be flown over an embassy anymore. Because you know how now if it's Pride Month, they could put the American flag on the top and right under it they have the Pride flag or the trans and Pride flag. I don't know the official title of that flag. I call it the rainbow flag. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they put that in there. Did you hear that? Is that
true? I did. So what I do know about the federal spending bill, there were about 40 or so attempts to put anti-LGBTQ riders into it. So little pieces of things, whether it was, you know, pulling out funding or trying to ban a certain thing through this process. There were 40 of them that were put in there. All of them failed except for this one. And all this particular one does is it says that the only flag on, you know, the flagpole at an American embassy can be the American flag, period. It doesn't ban Pride flag specifically. I think the conservatives have like touted this as a huge win because it will prevent people from flying Pride flags below the American flag out here. But it's not that they were banned entirely. It's just that only the American flag can be flown there. Can embassy staff still have pride flags in their office? Absolutely. Can government officials still, you know, have a pride pin? Yes, absolutely. It's not a full-on ban. And, you know, as much as I think it's important, and I think we should continue to fight for that visibility at our embassies, in our government spaces, and public places as a whole, in the grand scheme of where we're at right now in a national conversation, this is a mountain out of a molehill here that conservatives are trying to tout as this huge anti-LGBTQ win, when in reality, it's a really pretty minor provision that I think over time people are going to be like, why did we waste so much time and energy fighting about this? And, you know, a decade from now, are we going to be talking about pride flags being banned? I doubt it.
Well, if they had their way, I think they would do it, right?
Sure. But I do think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I know folks get worried about these moves and, you know, whenever there's, you know, pieces that are going to have some impact on our community. But I think it's actually a sign of how little traction they have that this was the only anti-LGBTQ thing they could get through.
Yeah, I had somebody tell me, you're going to love this one. I'm good. I really am good. Somebody said to me, you know, the only thing about gay people I just can't deal with is that you always have to have that flag flying around, you know? And I looked at it, because I knew she was coming from the other side, you know, the other side of the aisle, I should say. And I said, oh, is that why you guys buy all these hats, Make America Great Again, and you have your Trump flags hanging off your cars, and you, is that why? And she didn't know what to say, because, hey, you know, if you could do it, you know, why not? You know, why can't we be proud of who we are, you know?
Yeah, look, we all signal our affiliations and our interests and our, you know, community, you know, connections all the time, whether it's your sports team jersey or, you know, your flag or whatever. And, you know, our community needs it because we need that sense of community and shared visibility in a way that I think is really meaningful. And so, yeah.
Absolutely. And it's bizarre to me that, you know, that these right wingers, they're complaining about, you know, inflation. Mm-hmm. And they spend all of this money on pride. I mean, excuse me, not pride. Trump flags and you know, shirts that have Trump's face on it, and you could go on and on. But they complain they have no money because, you know, cookies cost too much money. Anyway, but I digress. So many news outlets have now reported. Now this is an update on the Next Benedict case. Who was a non-binary high school student who died shortly after a bullying incident that occurred in the bathroom of their high school. It turns out Next died by committing suicide as a result of the bullying and beatings they experienced in school. According to the medical examiner's reports, Next died because of a lethal combination of drugs that were available in Next's home. Some right-wing media are claiming that this news exonerates the school and the girls who bullied Nex, and saying that Nex's death was not caused by the beatings received, but in my opinion, it's worse, because I think committing suicide, to go to that extreme, to end your own life, is much worse than the physical beating itself. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, first I would say, you know, for any youth listening, if you need support, please reach out. You know, groups like the Trevor Project are a great resource for youth who are struggling with mental health and need that affirming LGBTQ supportive mental health resource. What happened to Next is awful and tragic. And I've had, you know, the fortune to work with our counterparts in Oklahoma at Freedom Oklahoma, who have done great work organizing in that state and supporting community. Look, at the end of the day, a child was bullied, attacked, beaten, and is dead. And that is a direct result of anti-LGBTQ, you know, rhetoric and harm. And I don't care, you know, at the end of the day, what, you know, how they ended up dying matters a lot less than that track. And until we address that, there are going to be more students like Nex. And there are going to be more tragedies that we all have to grapple with until we can address the root cause of anti-LGBTQ behavior. Of, you know, Nex was a member of the Choctaw Nation, anti-Indigenous behavior. All of these things are interrelated.
Yes, well, we get the music to cue in. Thank you so much, Kat, for joining us on the Downright Upright show. And to my listeners, thank you. Again, go to outfront.org and get more information on Kat and on the organization. They do amazing work. Love you all. Kisses, hugs. And we're going to wave goodbye.